Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Richard Holohan, Chief Executive Officer of Polarion. It's P-O-L-X. Richard, thanks for joining me.
Good to be with you, Justin, as always.
Yeah, now yesterday you got FDA acceptance for the filing of a new drug application, which is very impressive, and we'll dig into that. But as always, Richard, there are always people listening to the podcast, especially around Christmas, actually. There are lots of new people. So if they're not familiar, can you just explain what you do, Polarion, please?
Yes, happy to do that. So our kind of reason for being is the drug device combination that we have, which hyperpolarizes the inert noble gas xenon 129, making it an imaging agent in functional magnetic resonance imaging, which we then apply to the assessment of pulmonary function in a dramatic, new, and otherwise unobtainable way.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And so the FDA acceptance, can you explain why is this significant? And, what were the other options here that could have happened?
Yeah. So the FDA can essentially do three things with any submission, Justin. The first thing they can do is take a look at what's been submitted, deem that it is not worthy of review, and simply reject it without comment. So that's kind of the worst case. The second thing that they can do is kind of go through the submission at a very high level, assess that it is not worthy of review, but with work might possibly make the bar for getting in. And so they'll reject the submission with a list of requirements for what you would have to do to meet the minimum requirements of having it accepted for review. So they can do that. Or the third thing they can do is accept it. So in our case, they've accepted our submission, which was the outcome that we had planned and worked for.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's 12 months now. So what do they do in that 12 months? What are they looking at?
Yeah, so if you just kind of rewind to first principles here, the FDA's charter is assessing the safety and efficacy of things. So in our case, that would be reviewing the content of our phase 3 clinical trial, which was the head-to-head equivalence trial versus Xenon 133 for the assessment of ventilation in the two indications, and they'll be going through that with a fine-tooth comb. I think the good news for us in review is that reviewing the data from equivalence trial is a fairly straightforward statistical activity. And we already know what the answer is. The analysis has been done. It was done at the conclusion of the trial. So we're looking for that process to go pretty straightforwardly through to a conclusion. The efficacy side is a little harder, and anybody who's been watching regulatory behavior for any period of time in the field would know that many submissions might have passed for efficacy but fail in safety, right? Many things along the roadway that fall in that category. And of course, for us, I think the beauty of our submission is our drug is an inert noble gas. And particularly in medical imaging, where most contrast agents are actually IV injected chemistry contrast agents, we have the benefit of our pharmacokinetic kind of pathway being you breathe the gas in, you breathe it out. It's not metabolized, and most of the exit paths for the other agents in medical imaging involve the kidneys and the liver and those kinds of things. There's a fairly kind of well-known behavior for some of those things, which are difficult on kidney function for elderly and pediatric patients. The FDA studies those things quite intensely. But here we are with an inert noble gas whose behavior is quite well understood by them already prior to our submission even. So we like the situation for our review. A head-to-head trial, statistical analysis, and inert noble gas as our drug, that should work.
Yeah. So essentially, is it safe? Does it work? And you're quite confident it's safe. It works. So how you must be quite confident on. Obviously, you can never tell. But how confident are you on getting the approval then?
Well, I think anybody who lives in this market predicts the behavior of regulators at their peril. So I'm not in the business of speculating on the outcome of the FDA's analysis. But I can say that we have had a really solid set of consulting specialists working with us on this. We've done everything from a process point of view that someone should do, including pre-meetings with the FDA, our pre-NDA filing meeting with the FDA, squaring everything up prior to the submission. It is a head-to-head trial. It is an inert noble gas. So I think an outside observer would say this looks like a pretty good setup for a normal review leading to a normal approval. But we'll see. The devil is in the details, as they say. There's all kinds of ways that people have lines of curiosity or interest in the submission, and we will deal with all of those.
Yeah. And finally, I mean, the share price took a bit of a knock. It's come back. People have bought the dip because they see that it isn't a big deal, I suppose. But how significant was it that you didn't get the priority review you asked for? And does that affect anything apart from time?
Yeah, no, it doesn't really. I think if you look at, if we just took a step back and reviewed this a bit, so our normal time frame would have been, and the normal time frame for any drug would have been 10 months for their review. In our case, though, remember that we're also requesting the Hatch-Waxman protection, which adds 60 days to the review period. So would have been 10 plus 2 or 12 all in for the review. If we had gotten priority review, that would have cut the review period to 6, but would have not altered the Hatch-Waxman assessment. So it would have been 8 or 8 versus 12. So essentially a fiscal quarter, which is not, I think, material to the kind of long-term success of the business. It just would have been nicer to be sooner rather than later. And to be honest, we'd like to be out there helping doctors and patients as soon as we possibly can, having nothing to do with the business model per se. But it didn't fall our way this time, remembering that given the fact that we were using the head-to-head equivalence trial as our clinical pathway here, technically there is no path for us in the current way that expedited reviews happen at the FDA. We simply don't qualify for any of the 6 kind of emergency use or accelerated review categories because we chose the head-to-head trial. So it was kind of a bit of out of bounds to have requested, but we had good advice that there was no downside to that, and so we did, particularly under the circumstances of the pandemic and the ability to help clinicians with post-COVID patients, as you saw in the BBC article that was published. But it didn't fall our way this time, and sometimes those things happen.
Yeah, so it's basically a technicality. And just to explain to people, the Hatch-Waxman is an exclusivity period, isn't it?
Yes. So in the U.S., there is a regulatory grant of market exclusivity under what's called Hatch-Waxman. So that's kind of different than the intellectual property pathway for erecting barriers to entry from a competitive point of view. But I think the FDA and the legislative process in the U.S. has always wanted to incentivize the development of new diagnostics and therapeutics. And so this legislation was created specifically to incentivize people bringing novel new products into medicine for the benefit of patients and doctors.
Yeah, absolutely. And you say in the RNS there, the company plans to make full use of this time with regards to commercialization and launch preparation. What kind of stuff will you be doing? What kind of news will we be seeing, do you think, Richard?
Sure. So on the interim period of the submission to market launch, There is a large set of activities that have to happen, particularly in the U.S. healthcare delivery system, having to do with establishing all of the coding, coverage, and payment schemes for the commercialization of the drug. So it's a fairly complex environment. There are a lot of very detailed activities that have to take place, a lot of research and use of healthcare economic data in approaching payers and in approaching clinical providers to make sure that everybody is set up and ready and familiar when we get there, and that we're not starting the development of those things post-approval. Yeah. So all of that work, all of those I's have to be dotted, all those T's have to be crossed. There's primary research that happens with clinicians in all of the different disciplines of this, and radiology and pulmonary medicine. So quite a bit of work to do there. And we're off doing it. Part of our last raise allowed us to get started with that. We've actually also added some staff to the business who specialize in the field. And that's been great for us in terms of, you know, replacing perceptions and experience with facts and data. And of course, all of those things change over time. It's a very dynamic landscape out there. Things are changing as we speak with respect to a lot of these things. So very happy to be kind of upgrading our knowledge base and assembling the talent to take this to market. Our model, if you recall our story, is we're taking this to market ourselves directly, particularly in the early stages of this. You want to directly control the messages and pricing and presentations to the KOLs and high end of academic medicine in the U.S. And so building that team, getting everybody educated and ready to go is what we're full on right now.
Yeah, yeah. What I find quite peculiar is there's an irony here, isn't it, where sadly, COVID has made your market bigger probably because of long COVID. Yeah. And that's why you decided to go for the priority review, because you thought there's greater need for that. But then the share price took a knock on the fact that it didn't get it. Yeah. So it's really odd, really.
Well, I think everybody views this from the angle that they're most familiar with. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that COVID has done is move pulmonary medicine kind of front and center in everyone's mind. It's also, in a very terrible way, highlighted how awful the tool set is that clinicians have presently to try to get their arms around the assessment of pulmonary function, the assessment of therapeutic regimes, what is happening exactly to patients, particularly these strange situations where the patients who were never hospitalized. Patients who self-medicated with over-the-counter drugs at home were never hospitalized, then find themselves with these long-term debilitating secondary effects in their kind of ability to do work, their ability to move around, and the healthcare system is struggling to help them. So that's what we do. We assess pulmonary function. You saw the BBC piece. It laid it out in living color and black and white text. It doesn't get any clearer. So I think the long haul patient side of this simply becomes a market segment in pulmonary medicine, the same as asthma, COPD, emphysema, cystic fibrosis, and all of the interstitial lung diseases. This kind of virus seems to have the worst of several kind of combinations of these effects, but they will, I think, healthcare will not unravel this problem without new tools, and so we're in a hurry to get there so we can help.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm going to ask you for the three reasons, of course, and because from an investor point of view, I think, you know, very rarely we've seen in the last 6 months the share price dip majorly. I mean, in fact, it's come back already, having dipped earlier on the first, when RNS first came out, it dipped, but now people are buying it up. But for people who may see this dip as an opportunity, but maybe, you know, just sitting on the sidelines, give them three quick reasons, Richard, why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Plarium to their watch list, please.
I will, Justin, thanks. So I think number one is it's a disruptive platform technology which stands the opportunity to completely reorganize the assessment of pulmonary function in medicine, bringing it into the 21st century as MR and CT previously had done. The second thing is that the technology is significantly de-risked now. We're into submission at the FDA. And finally, the team. The company has an excellent veteran team in the domain, including two strategic investors. So I think we really have a great set of people to take this technology to market.
Great stuff. Richard, thanks very much. Have a happy Christmas, and we'll catch up in the new year.
Yeah, you too, Justin. See ya.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.